Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today we have a special program. This is January 1st, 2018. And I thought I would take this one show, which I do each year, and reflect back on what lessons have been learned from 2017, what has been accomplished, what efforts made, and then what I'm projecting to be the things we can engage in that would be meaningful, with real good intent to make a difference in this world for 2018. And I want to begin by looking at some of the basics. For example, there are highlights. One of the highlights this year were the lectures. I did more than 80 lectures in the past year. And I don't announce the lectures simply because with social media, when people know I'm going to be lecturing a given venue, it's always packed. And I want to make sure every single lecture is different. I don't like repeating myself. It's a challenge to keep myself in shape and sharp. I've always had this desire to have a forum that I would call Socrates' Garden, meaning a place where we could listen to remarkable minds from around the world, the men and women who have contributed something so original and so unique that we are kind of in that ooh-ah moment. We're very happy to be present to absorb what they're sharing with us. I even created a Socrates Garden to invite remarkable minds, and in fact did so. And this was a wonderful experience. But now that I see that it's not possible, nor is it economically feasible, to bring people to lectures. It's just with people's schedules, with the cost of flying and the other challenges people have, the new reality is to create forums to take your message and the message of all those other people who can contribute to our well-being and provide solutions, take the message to the people. And hence this year, I'm wrapping up a lot of my lectures. In fact, for the new year, 2018, I've eliminated all lectures. I told my agent, I said, don't book me any time because I'm going to try something different, at least for the first 6 months. I'm going to do webinars. Now, I don't know if you have participated in any webinars, but they're the solution to all this. Why? In a webinar, you can both see the person and hear them, and you can also type in questions or comments or statements on whatever issue is being addressed. And that's very positive. So to test this out, this past year I did about 5 webinars. I did one on what to do when disaster strikes. Now, for those people who went through the massive fires in California, Washington State, Oregon, in Montana, as well as the flooding in Louisiana earlier in the year, in West Virginia, and even up in Wisconsin, for those people who had to be evacuated, over 7 million Floridians were evacuated. It was the largest evacuation in American history. The entire state was just on both sides, on 95 going north on the east side, on the Atlantic, on Route 75, over on the west coast of Florida, bumper to bumper. Now, many of us stayed put. We stayed in our homes, in part because knowing that sooner rather than later, there would be a remarkable weather event that would not consider our comfort or safety, the value of our property or all of our efforts to create a certain quality of life and standard of living. It would just come and devastate everything. And that's exactly what it did. From the Keys clear up through Orlando, and especially where I live on my ranch in Southwest Florida, winds were over 150 miles an hour, category 4. In fact, right over the ranch, you could see the sky where the eye was. And a lanai just picked completely up, weighing thousands of pounds, and hurled 200 yards away. Giant steel light poles that were 20 foot high ripped out of the ground. So when you see what nature can do and you're not prepared, you think, wow, better not stay in hubris. Well, 22 years ago when I bought the property, originally bought it from my older brother, Howard, and he couldn't take the northwest Texas temperature anymore because it rained so much, and it was bitterly cold for about 5 months a year and then boilingly hot for about 3 months a year. And so he wanted nice weather all the time as he was recuperating from lung cancer. And so I said, well, you want to be a cowboy, so we got that old Gene Autry ranch. Now you want to be a Floridian? Find a place. And he did, out in the country, out where it's not crowded. And then I went ahead and had the advantage of being able to use my desire for landscape architecture and grow things. I love planting and growing. But when you plant as many trees on as large a property as this is, once almost 40 acres, in a residential area, that means you've got more trees for nature to tear out of the ground. In fact, after the storm, there was so much damage that if you had a football field, you could stack the entire football field 6 foot high, every inch of it, that football field, and that's how much was taken off the property and shrubs and bougainvillea and palm fronds. That doesn't include the debris off the roofs of the buildings. But I had prepared for that. As a result, the main house, fully intact, I built it from the get-go to withstand a category 580-mile-an-hour winds with the storm shutters and the storm windows that were not required at the time. But now that was planning ahead, and it worked. Independent water wells, not working on city water, independent generators, so that each building had its own generator. Then when all the neighbors had no electricity or no clean water, at least I could provide that to them as a good neighbor. But these are the same people who every year when electric goes out from torrential storms, they never get ahead of the curve. And I always wondered why, if this is happening every year and you're out of electricity, you're out of water for days or weeks on end, why don't you simply prepare so the next time you're not susceptible? But that was not to be the case. And it just tells me more about human nature. So I did a webinar on all this. Where are the best places in America to live? Now and in the future. To know that, you have to look at the entire weather patterns. You have to see the hottest year on record, the hottest days, the biggest sandstorms, the most soil erosion, the most flooding, and flooding in places that have never flooded before, upstate New York, upstate in Vermont, in valleys, in towns, washed out. Things we don't hear about. So where is it likely to be safe to live? And why? And what about all those beetles that are decimating hundreds of millions of trees coming from Florida north that are now as far as going into Connecticut, upstate New York? What can be done? What happens when you live in a place that used to be magnificent in the summertime, like Flagstaff, or up in the mountains of Colorado, that now it's all dry, and now it's burning? You put a house up there, the house is going to burn. So I took all that into consideration. I did a webinar. And the webinar was an important contribution because it was packed. In fact, there were so many people trying to get on the webinar, from all over the world, by the way, because I didn't limit it to just the United States. I talked about what countries are likely not to be sustainable now and in the future. Countries that historically have been wonderful to retire to or live at or visit, like Portugal or Spain or Greece or much of Italy. Now not. but countries that still are viable, Scotland, Ireland, not England, because you're the bureaucracies and how the authorities deal with you would limit what you're able to do if you wanted to homestead and other things. In any case, I began to think about, if I want to help women with their health, and if I want to help women slow down their aging process and the diseases that come with that in our society, like breast cancer and dementia. So I did a webinar on reversing menopause, did another webinar on reversing brain aging, because there are a lot of people who have good, sharp brains, but their parents don't. And they're now taking care in their 40s and 50s, they're taking care of their parents at home first, and then later in assisted living, and then nursing homes, and watching the parent decline to the place where they're not recognizing their own sibling or their children, it's depressing. So how can we help them? So all told, I did 5 webinars. They were all enormously successful with a lot of nice people and good comments and questions during the webinar. So the question is, why should I do a lecture, for example, in Manhattan, that 1,000 people could fit into a lecture hall, when if I did the same identical lecture as a webinar, I could reach 100,000 people worldwide and even show a film. Start with a film on the theme you're going to talk about and then follow up with questions, even invite guests on to share that forum. And why not have people who, yeah, you could hear them if you live in the New York City area and you listen to our sister station, WBAI, for, you know, a half-hour interview with a remarkable mind. But what if we decide to take that Socrates Garden where the person is giving that webinar and you don't have a time restriction, so if it's 1 hour or 2 hours, you're getting the best that person and can share, and you're in the comfort of your own home watching it. And how much did that cost you? What, $20 versus going away? So I see now that the future will have limited local appearances, but using the internet to take your messages to the whole world. I even helped a person who's an older, very gifted artist who wanted to be a part of an intentional community, but because of physical limitations, felt that they would rather stay where they're at. So I said, then hook up a camera, promote yourself, set up a webinar, and each week people can come and learn your particular type of art, taking old furniture and making it something really nice and beautiful again. And so the person's in the process of doing that now. Now think if you want to know glass blowing or some other skill, and you didn't have the money to go to a place, to go to an artist retreat, but that artist retreat came to you, bringing that information to you. So that's going to be the new year. Lots of webinars on important themes, so anyone worldwide can come. Just by going to their computer, they're there. And ask their questions, get information, download all the stories, etc. So that was a big part of 2017. Now, when you consider that I've done over 5,000 to 6,000 lectures, I used to lecture twice a day. There was so much demand, packed houses, but it was an enormous amount of time and energy, rushing from one location to another location and doing that every day of the week. And now, a different way of doing it. Also, I was able recently to premiere a new film. The film is called Deadly Deception. It received some very positive reviews from the people in the audience, and we'll be posting their comments tomorrow up on prn.fm as well as carrienall.com. And I like to film people as they're exiting a screening, just get their feedback, see what they felt about the film. And now, when people say, well, it's going to show out here in Los Angeles, no. No, the days of me flying down to Washington, D.C. or out to Los Angeles and premiering it Those are over. Now what we do is we'll screen it. We'll have a worldwide film premiere, and then we'll have a webinar afterwards. This will be in about 2 weeks from now. And you'll see the whole film. Then I'll have some of the leading activists from Ireland, England, France, Germany, Italy, and Australia and New Zealand and America on, so you can see and hear them. Now, do you realize how expensive it would be to bring those people into the United States to fly them in if you wanted them to attend a press conference? Now you don't have to do that. Now, there is a limitation. Not everybody is computer savvy. Not everybody is on the internet, but the vast majority of people are. And so those who are not, we will provide that webinar so that they can get the webinar and put it in whatever form they can use. But for 99% of the people, it's a big difference, and you can reach millions of people. In fact, I just asked Glenn, our IT person, how many people have downloaded our films off YouTube? Well, with the latest film not up there, but everything else up there, and Plant Code's not up there, it's 6 million, approximately 6 million. That does not include all the other websites that have posted it, and they also have huge numbers. So you're talking about millions upon millions. So if you want to get a good message out, now we have a much better way of doing it. So new films this year, I have two new ones. We'll start the year with Deadly Deception. Later on, we'll follow up with one whose title I can't give you at the moment because it'll reveal too much about the film. It's not finished being filmed yet. It's almost done. It'll be finished another month. And then later in the year, we're going to have Manufacturing Madness. I've been working on that for about 7 years now, and we're wrapping it up about the entire fraud of our mental health field in America and how we've given people diagnosis for mental conditions that simply do not exist. So three major documentaries coming this year. Also this year, I had the privilege of premiering Plant Codes on public television stations around the United States, and including Colorado Public Television, and they rate shows 0, not good, 5, mega hit. Average is 2. And that's how the other stations overnight know whether or not to pick up one of the new shows that's being premiered. They'll tell the people, well, we played it in this time, morning, afternoon, prime drive, overnight, and here's what it did. It did a 1.5, it did a 2, did a 2.3. And generally a station won't pick up another program unless it's a 3. And you almost never hear of 5s. We, with Plant Codes, we had 5++. Biggest hit in their history. And then other stations picked it up in it. And there not even a book to go with it, by the way. But it was a major contribution to the vegan movement because it showed doctors who had cured themselves on a plant-based diet and then went on to help cure their patients. So that was very positive. This year, we also premiered a new cookbook, a vegan cookbook. Now, I have a brand new vegan cookbook that I've just finished. Before I left New York, I finished the recipes, and we are filming them, photographing them, and these are real high-end gourmet. I mean, these, each one, if I would look at it, and if it didn't look like a piece of art, we scratched it and started over, down in the kitchen, rebuilding, until we had something that looked like a piece of art. So that one, probably 6 months from now, the late spring, early summer, that'll be arriving. It'll be over 200. It's a big book, by the way. It's not just beautiful, 250 beautiful photographs. It's everything that a vegan would need to transform their lives. And it's almost 900 pages. So that's coming. Plus a couple of other books, one called Saving the Planet, Saving Ourselves, the most comprehensive book on the environment ever written. You would have to have read 4,000, 5,000 scientific papers, which was done, read at least 100 books on the environment, because I wanted to write something that told about the entirety of our environment, not just global warming. That global warming is one single piece of the puzzle. Acidification of the oceans, algae blooms, dead zones, artificial fertilizers, monoagriculture. These also contribute. The use of plastic and plastic islands the size of Texas in the Pacific Ocean, Fukushima, never stop polluting the water or the air or the ground, and all the other things that we should pay attention to that historically we haven't. Unless something's impacting us immediately and directly, we tend not to give it any significance, and we should. So that is that's a major work. That'll be out again in the late spring, early summer. Also, I completed this year, 2017, Veterans Village. I had promised a group of vets back in Titusville, Florida, in the woods. That's where I met them, and I spent several days speaking with them and filming them. I did a documentary, as I promised them I would, called American Veterans Forgotten and Betrayed. And one of them came up to me afterwards. He said, you know, people in the media, they come and do a story, and you never hear from them again. I said, well, here's what I'll do. I'll support the daily bread so that you have healthy food. And I will also build you a place, a beautiful place. I see that there, in 16,000 homeless vets, there's about 20 that can stay in a little motel unit. And I went in each room of the motel unit, met the vets there, and the sergeant major that oversaw it was trying to get the vets a permanent place outside, get them jobs. And he said he was having a rough time at it because people have a bias against hiring vets, especially homeless vets, because they believe they all suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder and they all are likely to go off at a moment's notice, and that's simply not true. So I asked the sergeant major, I said, if you had a wish list to do something for the vets, what would it be? And he gave me his wish list of have vocation training by experts in each field that are training, like you have a plumber teach plumbing and a mason master teaching how to use concrete and bricks and tile and electrician, etc. And to give a place that's aesthetically pleasing. These are not. So I said, I'm going to build you a place. And when I'm finished with it, I'll give you a call. And I could see from his expression, he said, yeah, okay. Well, I built a place. Bought the property. There's a beautiful, and I mean beautiful, home, large, that can accommodate 10 people with privacy and private baths and a common living room. It's all furnished. It's done. Even organic sheets and towels and bamboo mattress beds. And the whole place is stocked with organic foods and juices and juice extractors and blenders. And an administrator has been brought on board to administer it. And this is not a hospital. It's a place where people who are homeless can stay, learn skills, try to find a job, or reconnect with their family, and then go on the next stage of their life. So I'm going to open it up for the first time to the vets in this coming 6 months. And I'm going back to Titusville. I'm going back and see how many of those vets are still there and let them know that it's the beginning. And if I could do it, and if it works, if we're able to show that we're able to help people get back their mental health, their physical health, get back into life and their families, society, then we could do this clear across the United States. So that happened this year. Also, I did a four-week retreat, and that was a remarkable experience because I had a chance to invite people. They could only come if they had medically untreatable conditions, meaning nothing medicine was going to do was going to reverse their condition, like advanced multiple sclerosis, end-stage Alzheimer's, excruciating pain from the Vietnam War with post-traumatic stress disorder, and on and on. End-stage lung cancer. Every single person had remarkable improvements. Some so remarkable that even regular Orthodox physicians there and observing couldn't understand what it was that they were seeing because they'd never seen it. As one doctor said to me, in 26 years of practice, I've never seen one of these people reverse as you've done here, and yet they've all reversed. I have no way of explaining this to my colleagues. I don't know what I would tell them when I go home. You don't have to tell them anything. They're not going to be open to this. Long ago, I learned that your truth may not align with someone else's. If you're not a person within a power paradigm and under the control and influence of that power paradigm, then no matter what truth you come to, no matter what reality you're able to create, it will be rejected, attacked, and you'll be vilified for the very success that they have not been able to achieve, but you have. But at least we proved it, and we filmed it, and we documented it. So we will then share that. Now, that's not for me to do another one-month retreat. That was exhausting. I was lecturing sometimes 6-7 times a day. I had to be there from early morning till late at night, every day, never left the property. So that took a lot. And with an outstanding staff that helped, that was remarkable in their efforts. But at least it established what was possible. And once again, through word of mouth, you share that. And those people will be invited on my radio program in this new year to share their stories of transformation. Also, with the investigative reports, we've done several important investigative reports this year on GMOs, on vaccines, and on the corruption in science and the bias in the media, and have printed, published those stories. We also have helped our sister station, WBAI. I brought the station over $450,000 in income this year, almost $500,000. And what was important and how it was done through retreats, through lectures, through premieres of films, it cost them nothing. They didn't have to lay out a penny, which means that the money they made during the fund drives became more valuable to them to pay expenses because they didn't have to pay for premiums on top of it for the most part. We were able to buy over 3,000 premiums. The station received the money. And I went to work and saw that the expenses were paid for by effort. I can't keep doing that. And my hope is that the station will not fall prey to either bankruptcy or to a sale or station swap. But right now, those in power at Pacifica at the national level and those running some of the stations would like to see BAI sold, especially the people at KPFA in Berkeley. And from their point of view, it makes sense. They're rigid ideologues. There's no openness. They engage in massive censorship and slander and libel with impunity. And they're highly political. And yet you don't see the depth of qualified people in management at any of the stations. You have people who have never had a background in professional non-commercial programming of radio who are program directors. You have people who have never managed non-commercial radio station who are managers. You have people on the local station boards who have no experience in radio or fundraising who are now highly opinion individuals on local station boards, and then they local station boards send their members to the national board. You have people running the national foundation, which controls 5 stations, who have had no previous qualified background. Now, there was a time when you had outstanding individuals running various aspects of Pacifica, and it was so successful. They had $3 million in the bank. They were going to buy two new stations. They had deep experience in fundraising, and yet there was an ideological split. Those who were really educated professionals and progressives, and those who were not. And those who were not won a battle and took over Pacifica and fired and purged everyone that disagreed with them, which was almost all the professionals. Lou Hankins, the best manager in Pacifica's history, and Mark and out in KPFK and others, and they replaced them with their friends. And we have fallen off a cliff, and no one's honest enough to say why we're in this position today when we were so successful for so long. I remember I had an Arbitron rating when it was about 1998, 97, where, and I still have it in our archives, where I had 100,000 quarter-hour listeners. Number one in New York, beating Rush Limbaugh on ABC, and I was on ABC at the time as well, but that was a weekend three-hour show. And look where we've come to today. And yet not a single person will step forward and say, yeah, we screwed up. We thought we knew what we were doing. We didn't. We were self-righteous. We took no prisoners. We destroyed everyone in our path. We gained complete control. And boy, did we make a mess of it. You won't hear that kind of honesty because they're not capable of being honest. And then throw in the idea that behind it all was the privatization of Democracy Now. And where on the left have you heard a single criticism of that coup, of privatizing a public asset? Democracy Now! Was started by my good friend, Samori Marksman. In fact, we were sitting having lunch when he was talking about it. One person from each of the five stations, each day of the week, would host it, but that's not how it turned out. So it's all about, are we willing to look for the truth where it is? And we're not. So I don't see a happy future for our sister station, even though I've been on it 41, going on to 42 years, because of all of what I just said. When you live in denial and not willing to be honest about how you evolved into the mess you're in, how are you supposed to get out of it? Yeah. So that's that. In any case, we also have to look at the fact that we are able to help it this year, but it's going to have to do better for itself in the upcoming year. Now, some other things. We invited some of the best minds in the world on, people talking about spiritual philosophies and political philosophies. Professor Andrew Harvey, the youngest professor in the history of Cambridge University, or Oxford University. Chris Hedges, Jim Garrison, Rabbi Michael Lerner, Professor Henry Giroux, Nathan Schwartz Salent, Diane Ravitch, Professor Robert Thurman. And we also had really in-depth investigative reports, original reports, while everyone else, including Democracy Now!, was saying intervention, you know, regime change is okay in Syria and, or in other countries like Syria and Libya. No, they were all giving you propaganda. We had on Eva Bartlett and Vanessa Bealey, who told you the truth, that America and Great Britain and France and Italy were all supporting regime change for their own ends and own means, for the oil, for the gold, for their natural resources. And we, the United States, and our CIA National Security Agency were supporting Saudi Arabia and Turkey, both of whom were supporting ISIS. We had on former CIA officials like Ray McGovern and Melvin Goodman and whistleblowers like William Binney and John Kurokawa. We had on environmentalists talking about climate change like Diane Burstford Kroger and Peter Wadhams and Dar Jamel and Guy McPherson, and economists such as Yves Smith from Naked Capitalism and Michael Hudson and Paul Craig Roberts and Ellen Brown. And we had on really important social analysts like Thomas Franks, Rebecca Gordon, and Dennis Kucinich, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, Anne Garrison, Robert Perry, and Louis Lapin, and Professor William Robinson, and dozens of interviews of physicians who promoted plant-based diet, and also articles, original articles, such as Chronology of Health Freedom Battles, and A Dream Cabinet for Millennials, and Injection Deception, and another article on cancer. These were original in-depth investigative reports, and we shared those with everyone. We also wrote, Cancer by Intent. So that also was a part of what we were doing. And we had many different productions. We followed a series looking at the CIA and the National Security Agency and the FBI and the State Department and the Deep State. We did several programs on the Deep State. We did a total of 14 programs on the Deep State and 67 commentaries. That's a lot of commentaries. Most radio programs never have a single commentary. We had over 67 in the last year. So very pleased about that. And I intend to do even more commentaries on important issues this year. But also, we're planning on having at least two, if not three, outstanding guests per week talking about issues that make a difference. And if I'm not able to have them on, if they're not available, then I will use their own writings and refer to them with their commentaries and share that with you. So one way or the other, hopefully live in person, but if not, then over the taking their articles or their documentaries. We also had a lot of audio clips, over 300 audio clips we played in the last year. And I select the audio clips from a lot of different sources to give you other people's insights into a particular problem. So I'll be doing more of that this year. So this is just some of the things that we can look back on. Plus, I counsel people. This was an extremely busy year for counseling terminally ill people. Hundreds. And I'm faced with the same numbers this coming year. I counsel as many as I can, even when I'm on the road. One of the things I'd like to see people do is start looking at their lives, where they're at now, and asking, where ideally would you like to be? Meaning of all the places that you could be and all the work you could do, what would be your ideal? And then ask yourself, what do you need in the way of resources to make the transition from where you're at to where ideally you'd like to go? And that brings me to the idea of what I'm going to be doing this year. I'm going to put together three intentional communities. One in Florida, one in Texas, and hopefully one upstate New York. And I've looked around the world in my travels, and a lot of people have historically had to go it alone. And for some people, that was fine. For that kind of alpha male, alpha female, they can do that. But for the vast majority of people, we don't have the resources to do it ourselves. A lot of people thought how great it would be to, you know, live on a farm. Well, living on a farm is not easy. You know, taking care of a farm or a ranch, we have animals, and I rescue animals. Was able to find some wonderful homes for animals that otherwise have been sold for meat by the people I had to get them from. And these are not free, by the way. You have to frequently, like today, this past year, I had to buy a miniature horse that weighed 400 pounds, and I had to pay $400 because the guy said, look, I can get $1 a pound. And the reason he wanted to sell the horse is because it had glaucoma or cataracts. And so it wasn't getting around well. And they're very functionary about this. So I found out about it, and so I gave him the $400 and worked intensely to try to reverse or improve the vision, and was able to do so over a period of 7 months. And then found a sanctuary where this creature, this wonderful sentient being, would be loved and have freedom and could roam in pastures and be around other animals, and had enough of his eyesight restored so he could have quality of vision, quality of life. So that gives me great joy to see that. And sometimes sadness, because when you've raised a little, like a little monkey from being a baby that was orphaned, and you hand feed it 12 times a day and give it baths and change its diapers and bond with it, and then it grows up, and now it's ready to regain the world, you try to find it in an environment where it can be around a lot of its, you know, its same kind, to socialize, to mate, to have families. And that day that you look at it for the last time, there's just a sadness, a deep sense of loss, because you have invested so much of your love and energy into it. And that's always a rough day. And the images of what you shared stick with you. And then there's some creatures you can't find a home for, because when they were babies, and whoever thought it was a great idea to have an exotic, which is really dumb, for a pet, and then one day one of their kids gets bitten and they rush it off to the vet and have its teeth pulled out, and then now it's withdrawn, and now they don't want it, and then I get a call, you know, and you get this little tiny creature that you can put in the palm of your hand, and you don't even hear it say a murmur for a year, and you realize as it grows and it gains its sense of trust in you, because you're not abandoning it, you're not hurting it, you're loving it, that the day comes also when you can't find it a home, because if you gave it to a zoo or to an animal sanctuary that had other, let's say, capuchins, immediately the dominant alpha female will come out, as they do, to challenge, to see where does this other person stand. And when the one that you have just found a home for opens its mouth, the other one sees it doesn't have any biting teeth. It's going to go in and just kill it. They just rip it to pieces. I wished it wasn't that way, but it is. There's so much ignorance within the people who say, well, you shouldn't have any animals. Well, those people, unfortunately, shouldn't it. And I'm against those people that think that somehow they're succeeding by euthanizing a million cats and dogs, especially when those cats and dogs never hurt anybody and just want to love and be devoted. So finding homes for these animals is the top priority. But more will happen. More homes were found. A llama that had a cleft palate found a home. An emu that had all kinds of crippling feet conditions found a home. So, you know, in time and patience, you find homes. But the big issue this year is going to be the whole idea that we are now approaching a perfect storm. What do I mean? I have the good fortune of having friends who are professors of economics, like Michael Hudson, and great trendsetters like Gerald Salante, and people who understand the world economic situation. And there are many of those people, I mean dozens, that I'm familiar with, close to, on a professional level. And then my own insights. And what I've come to a decision at this moment is that we're today, we are the world's leading economy. And even though we represent only 1/5 the population of China, we have 300 million, they have, well, a little under, they have 1.3 billion, However, with 4% of 20% of the world's population that compared to China, they are growing and have been growing at anywhere between a 7 to a 12% gross domestic product per year. They also have a lot of people who have savings, and they have a massive educational program going on to educate their poor people. They're building cities. They're putting people to work at huge numbers, sometimes just creating phantom cities. Nobody lives in the cities. They just have caretakers, but nobody lives there. Cities that could hold millions of people, cities that would dwarf in their complexity of architecture and their beauty any city in the United States. There are almost 100 of those all over China. They're building the most sophisticated, fast rail system in the world. They already have it. Now they're building more. They're building over 2,700 more miles. They're working in cooperation with 67 countries on the new China Silk Road. We, on the other hand, are doing nothing. We're involved in countries militarily. We're undertaking to destabilize countries that we disagree with on any level, and regime change in those that we want to see our people who are more friendly to our neoliberal philosophies in power. Well, one of the things China and Russia has been doing, they took the long view. It's like the Native American would think seven generations ahead before making important decisions. We don't think 24 hours ahead. We just do something out of impulse and assume that it's going to be right because someone in authority said, let's do it. Now imagine this. Imagine that if Russia has its currency, the ruble, backed by gold, and China has its currency, the yuan, backed by gold. So we have nothing backing our fiat currency. We just keep printing money. So we can always pay bills as long as we're the reserve dominant currency. No one's going to challenge us, our hegemony. But that's going to change in the next 24 months. In the next 24 months, the enormous power of South Korea and India and China and the other countries and Russia that make up that area of the world will become dominant, where we no longer will be the number one industrial power. Now, that won't change the wealth of people in America. Most people who are wealthy today will stay wealthy. Whatever they have that they paid for, it'll still be there, and they can maintain it, enjoy it for whatever it's worth to them. But what it means is a lot of people who are now spending without any thought of what is the value of what you've gained from what you've spent. You've spent money, and frequently that is not savings. You spend it in creating debt. Now, you not only have to pay back the debt, you have to pay the service of the debt. And that's frequently a compounding interest. And it's collateralizing that debt with whatever you bought. And as a friend of mine, not a close friend, but someone who's more of an acquaintance than a friend, was talking to me, and he said, for the first time in my 27 years as a financial planner, I don't invest people's money. I simply explain the best ways of investing, and I'm getting millionaires. And he only takes a client on if they earn at least $2 million a year. And he said, they're coming to me saying they're running out of cash. They can't afford to sustain their lifestyle. And so I sit with them and we go over, and sure enough, if they made $5 million, they spent $5 million. If they made $2 million, they spent $2 million. The trouble is, he said, that everything they spent their money on has very little redeemable value. Give me an example. A man brought in a watch. He had spent $70,000 on this very expensive watch. So when this man looked up, the financial planner looked up what that watch would now go for, there were over 2,000 of those watches also being sold. And it was worth about $12,000. So someone's in arguing with him, well, hold on, I paid $70,000 and I was said this would go up in value. No, all jewelry goes down in value. The only thing that will go up in value is very famous art. Even the worst of a Picasso, the ugliest of any of the modern painters, de Kooning, will still go for $100+ million. But there's a very rarefied small group of people who can afford that, generally billionaires. Everyone else, you can't. So all those cars, and with a few exceptions with cars, you know, there are some cars like a Shelby. If you bought it right, it's money in the bank. But we've thought our real estate, which should go up realistically 1-3% per year, would be helping us for the future. But when real estate goes up 40% in 1 year, or 100% for 5 straight years per year, then people are going to think, my goodness, I'm rich. I bought this house for $300,000. It's now worth $1 million. I got $700,000 equity. And then they go and spend it. Or they buy other property. And they buy things they don't need. You buy a flat screen TV for $1,000. A month later, it's worth $300. And most cars will lose 30-40% of their value within the first 2 years. So people have been going crazy in America buying stuff. We have just been buying stuff way beyond any sense of reasonableness. We're not asking, do we really need this? How should I invest my money, whatever amount it is, so I can get a maximum return? And we're not asking ourselves that. We're just living in this kind of utopian dream state that whatever we do will increase in value, when just the opposite is likely to happen. We have a real estate bubble again. So you can expect anywhere from a 20-50% reduction in the value of property when the market collapses in the next 2 years, I believe. The commercial real estate value is way overblown. I've done the math many times on this and showed, in fact, I just was in the gym working out with a guy who is one of the top commercial real estate developers in New York. And he's telling me there's a massive bubble out there. He's saying, as someone who's in the market and saying, he's going to stop now because it's going to deflate. He says we're building more buildings where the price is $2,000 a square foot and up than there are people who can afford to pay that. You have 51% of all the people living in New York City who are living at or below the poverty level. But we don't pay attention to them. We just look at the big co-ops, the condominiums, the new buildings, the new stores. We're not looking at all the stores going broke. We're not looking at the real unemployment number. You see, the real unemployment number is not 4.3%. It's 24-28% because there's 100 million Americans who had worked, who could work, who are not working, or they're not working full time. So you got to look at what would happen if you have full employment. But at least 14 million Americans have taken themselves out of the workplace because they can't find a job. So that's what we're faced with today. Lying about numbers. Yeah, we have a bubble going up in Wall Street in the equity market that's going to collapse. And the pension funds that are in that market are going to really take a hit. 401ks are going to get wiped out. So what's the answer? I see that the economy is going to be substantially altered when this correction occurs. When will it occur? There's a difference of opinion. Some believe that it'll be a slow release and a correction over a 2-year period. Others believe that it'll happen in one section and then it'll impact other sections. In any case, you have 20 million college kids, millennials, who owe more money than what they can pay. A high number of them, 4 million, have simply stopped paying on it. They're now susceptible, depending upon where they live, to being arrested and taken into poverty prisons. And we have actually made feeding the poor, caring for the poor, a crime in some communities, over 70 communities in America. They've actually put spikes into benches where people would normally sit, and now you have to have money to put in, and then the spikes go down to keep homeless people from laying on them. What does that say about a society that wants to have people not sleep on a bench and put spikes on it? So I see that we're going to have an economic collapse, not necessarily overnight, but sustainable and worse than anything we've seen, including the Great Depression. I see people whose equity is in dollars alone or T-bills getting creamed. I see cities and states filing, or cities at least, filing bankruptcy far more than what we've had in the past. And I see a lot more unemployment with new technologies, automation, and artificial intelligence, and offshoring taking upwards of 50% of the entire American workforce over the next 5 years. And now those people are not going to have a job the way they had in the past. Standard of living is going to be reduced for at least 190 million Americans. The standard of living will be the same or increase for about 70 million Americans, and I see a decimation of the professional class in America, where they've been living beyond their means. They wanted to think they were very rich. They couldn't pull back. They let their kids go to the private colleges. They bought real estate they couldn't afford. And yet they were working every single day to pay for this. And there's 12 million of, no, 17 million. So I see not just the 17 million, a large percentage, having to reduce their standard of living, but also curtail their children and spouses from spending money on frivolous things or things they don't need. That's going to impact the rest of the economy. And the wages that people make will not keep up with the standard of living, and as a result, they will not have a quality of life. So we're going to have and have-nots even at a greater separation from each other than what we see now. On top of that is the environment, with environmental issues taking hold in Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida, and devastating those communities, as well as California. So you're talking about California, 39 million people. You're talking about Texas and Florida. You're talking about an awful lot of people, over 50 million Americans, who are going to have a challenge to their quality of life, the value of their real estate. And those who cannot afford to move won't be able to. And those who can frequently will. You're going to have evacuations out of states for people who have had one too many natural disasters. On top of that, you have our body politic. A lot of young people are disillusioned with our political system. And there's at least 100 million independents who have dropped out of the system. So that perfect storm of our body politic and social issues, the environment, disease manifesting in people at numbers unheard of, including obesity and diabetes and heart disease. And then you take all that and put it into the equation, and you realize you better change. And I believe intentional communities are the future. I believe that there's going to come a time when people will seek out a wonderful, beautiful place to live that has quality of life, where you maintain your autonomy, work on your own projects, but there's certain things you'll share in common, and like dining and organic food gardens and things that you would enjoy. So that's what I see happening in the future, and I believe that that is going to start this year. I'm certainly going to be working on that starting in probably the spring, summer, in Texas, Florida, and if all goes well, upstate New York. Why upstate New York? Because further upstate, away from gas hydrofracking, away from problems where there's adequate water, beautiful scenery, land is cheap, and it's not that expensive. So that's where the future's going to be. So we're out of time. I'm looking forward to this new year. I'm looking forward to sharing a lot of it with all of you. So, and don't forget to go to our prn.fm and look at all the articles we post every day on my personal Facebook for you to help you look at the world as it really is. Have a wonderful holiday today, everyone. I look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow.